I would like to introduce to you now, not my student, but my colleague on the faculty of the University of California, Angela Davis.
The Berkeley campus has perhaps the most unique tradition of political activity. You have continually assumed the political responsibility of responding to acts of repression and have been capable of involving the masses of the students on this campus in demonstrative political actions. If only for this reason, I feel very proud to be able to speak to you today. Now, during the last few weeks, there's been a lot of commotion over the idea of academic freedom, and indeed a lot of resolutions have been passed condemning the regents for their overt violation of the principle of academic freedom. Now, at first, I interpreted the regents' actions as obviously a violation of academic freedom, is obviously an attempt to subvert this whole notion, but I continue to maintain that there were other levels, such as racism, such as political repression. However, not too long ago, Herbert Marcuse made a statement at a rally down in San Diego. He said that he could not continue to expound all of the noble concepts of freedom, justice, equality in the classroom while these liberties were being continually infringed upon, violated in reality. Now, this provoked me to reevaluate that whole notion of academic freedom. Now, those of us who've been involved in struggle for a long time, I think, have come to see academic freedom as some kind of an empty concept which professors use to guarantee their right to work undisturbed by the real world, undisturbed by the real problems of this society. But what we have to begin to see is that academic freedom is an empty concept unless we connect it up with social and political freedom, the real basis of academic freedom in this country. Now, the freedom to teach, the freedom to learn is totally impotent if it's not accompanied by the freedom to act in a way that's consonant with the principles one believes in. And the many instances of the violation of academic freedom which have occurred recently are the result of and are reinforced by the continual violation of real, concrete freedom in the society. There's Marvin X at Fresno State who's being denied the right to teach because he sees the path of black liberation as being the construction of a black nation. There's Dangerfield in Los Angeles, who's being denied the right to teach in a black high school manual arts because he sympathized with the demands of the students and of the community to make that education relevant to the community, relevant to the black liberation struggle. There's Saul Castro, who's attempted to do the same thing for the Chicano community. He is being denied the right to teach. Now, there's something else we have to talk about. A lot of professors think that they have a monopoly over academic freedom. Now, I think that students ought to have the monopoly over academic freedom because it ought to be an inherent process, an inherent element in the process of learning itself. Now, another instance of this violation of academic freedom has occurred at San Fernando Valley State, where 24 black students tried to protest the existence of racism, which was obviously interfering in the process of their learning, and they are now facing 2,000 felony charges for having tried to protest this racism. Now, we therefore cannot make the mistake of saying that academic freedom is in itself a useless notion. We have to be the ones who inject into it its real content, its relationship to political and social freedom. And I think especially at this juncture of history, we are in need of academic freedom, freedom of speech, freedom of opinion, precisely because we have to begin to unveil the predominant oppressive ideas and acts in this country. This is what we have to use academic freedom for. I think this is happening in the universities and the colleges and the schools. People are becoming increasingly aware that the university has to become involved with concerns that are moving the community in more ways than one. That is, we can't allow it to be a mere reflection of the atrocities and injustices which are being perpetuated in the society today, such as the fact that the University of California has, I don't know how many research grants for developing more efficient ways of murdering in Vietnam. Sociologists attempt to explain away the existence of social problems within the universities. Psychologists attempt to discover mechanisms of rendering individuals who have, because of the fact that the society is saturated with oppression, reacted in a way which is not normal in this society, not normal in their standards. The psychologists are developing mechanism to render them more normal, to render them comfortable with the conditions of oppression. Now, I heard not too long ago even that there's a professor down in one of the UC campuses who's maintaining that black people are inherently genetically inferior to white people. See, these are the kinds of things that we have to combat. This is not a reflection of academic freedom. These people are exploiting the notion of academic freedom. The real free academic freedom, the real free intellectual atmosphere of the university ought to consist in the ability to link up with concrete struggles, to link up with the black liberation struggle, the Chicano liberation struggle, the struggle in Vietnam, and to not only criticize what's going on in the society, but to pose solutions, revolutionary solutions. We have to have the academic freedom to continually expose the imperialist policies of this government throughout the Third World. If we aren't able to link up with these struggles, then that's when academic freedom becomes a farce. And it would mean no more than the freedom to remain unaware, to be ignorant of pressing human problems. It would mean freedom from, not freedom to, freedom from the recognition of the problems in this society. It would mean the ivory tower, or for us, the ebony tower intellectual. And these people who see academic freedom in these terms as being the guarantee to sever themselves off from society, they don't realize that they are either conscious or unconscious accomplices in the exploitation and oppression of man. Now, we've struggled for open admissions in the universities, in the colleges. The universities say that if they open their sacred doors, which are the guardians of academic freedom, if they open those doors to the wretched of the earth, then their standards are gonna fall. They say, as one of the chancellors on one of the universities said, the university would then become an intellectual sandbox. They tell us that the oppressed have to become mature before they can enter the sacred doors of the university, so therefore we should go to the high schools and we should tell the high schools to prepare the oppressed for the sacred doors of academic freedom. We go to the high schools in the ghettos and barrios and tell them what the people in the universities have told us to tell them. But they say that they can't do anything because by the time the students have gotten to the high schools, they've already been tainted in the elementary schools. So they tell us to go to the elementary schools and solve the problem there. We go to the elementary schools, and the elementary schools say that the problem is not here, the problem is in the social environment. You know, black people, brown people, oppressed, exploited white people have been inculcated because of their circumstances with an unwillingness to learn. So we have to change that environment. I agree with them. They're telling us what to do. They're telling us that we have to talk about revolution. The enemy very often shows us the path to liberation, I think. But they cannot accept the logical conclusion of their ideas. What they do instead is they, people like Jensen emerge, who say that because of the genes that, you know, black people possess, we could never, in effect, correct that inability to learn. And then the vicious circle is created. There's no way of breaking out of it. It's just like when the slaves used to say, you know, the slave owners used to say that God ordained certain people to be slaves and certain people to be masters. Now, I think what we have to do is, while demanding things like open admissions, we have to take their advice too. We have to go to the streets. We have to talk about a complete and total change in the structures of this society, because that's the only way that a concept like academic freedom is going to be made relevant. We have to go to the streets. Now, I think that, you know, those who control the educational system in this country, in this state, are really afraid of the fact that education can lead to something like that, that education can begin to fulfill its true function, the solution of human problems. Therefore, they deny us academic freedom when we link up with those struggles. They deny us academic freedom, and this is the paradox, by means of force and violence, you know, both physical and mental. They deny us our right to academic freedom when we say that academic freedom means nothing unless it is a reflection of political and social freedom. And of course they wouldn't accept this conclusion, because it's to the advantage of the people who possess the economic power in this country that education does not fulfill its true function. It's to their advantage that students are brought out on stagnant, rigidified ideas. It's to their advantage that the mind of the future be the forced reflection of their interests of the people who have the economic and political power in this country. We have to talk about liberating the mind as well as liberating the society. Now, why do Reagan and the Regents continue to thwart the real process of education? Well, you know, for one thing, I think we all realize that they're sort of stupid, and they really haven't been educated themselves, so they are not even able to perceive what that process should be. And I think anyone who is so unintelligent to have made the remark that Pauli made, that there was no racism involved in firing me because they had already planned to replace me with another black person, you know, that kind of person is totally incapable of determining the kinds of things that ought to be taught in the universities today. They do not deserve to determine what form education the thousands of young people in this state are getting. Now, yet and still, you know, the regents and their Führer are, you know, themselves the ones who have continued to usurp the power which we rightfully have. They determine what we ought to teach, what we ought to learn, who ought to teach, who ought to learn, and I reject that immoral and illegal usurpation of power, which rightfully belongs to those who have the knowledge and experience to make such decisions. And although I don't want to put down the faculty, I think that at this juncture in history, the students are the ones who really have the knowledge and experience to determine what kind of education we need. Now, you know, the regents supposedly represent the people of California. This is what is stated in the Constitution. And the mere fact that Reagan appoints him completely refutes that. And I think that you would probably be very interested to know that not one black person, not one Chicano, not one Indian, and I think only three women have ever been appointed to the Board of Regents. And no students, of course, either. And they're talking about themselves as being the lawful representatives of the people of California. Now, who do they represent? Who do the regents represent? There's, you know, Bank of America. It has a very large representation on the Board of Regents. A lot of banks in California. There are a lot of corporations. Political parties, the prevailing political parties, have very, very good representation on the Board of Regents. And I maintain that they have established an illegal tyranny over the University of California, which is just perhaps one small element of that overall tyranny which has been established over the people of this entire country. It's become necessary to establish that tyranny because I feel that they are becoming increasingly afraid of the people, of the students. They are afraid of Herbert Marcuse. They are afraid of Eldridge Cleaver. They are afraid of Marvin X. And most of all, they are afraid of the power the students are beginning to assert throughout the universities. They were afraid when they killed and brutalized human beings because you decided that you had the right to establish a park for the people on land which rightly belongs to the people. They are afraid of us because we, and they have every right to be afraid of us because we are continually demonstrating to them that they have every right to be afraid, and we have to do this over and over again. They have every right to be afraid. Now, radicals are emerging on the campuses throughout the whole university system and are being attacked. This is just a reflection of the emergence of radical movements dedicated to destroying the capitalist society all over the society. And the attacks on these radicals in the universities, these are mere reflections of the killings which occur every day in the ghettos and on the battlefields in Vietnam. And we have to make that connection. We have to link up these struggles. They launched an attack on me because I'm in the Che Lumumba Club, which is an all-black collective in the Communist Party devoted to struggling for black liberation, And I think they realized that if I were allowed to teach at UCLA, that I would get involved in the struggle to combat them, to combat idiots who call themselves regents. Now, I think that we have to view the court decision that was made a few days ago as a victory from one point of view. It's a victory because it exposes to the people the increasingly fascist tendencies in this country. It exposes Reagan and the regents as unscrupulous demagogues. We also have to consider the reason for the decision. The decision came about only because of mass pressure, only because of the fact that all over the state there were demonstrations, there were indications that we would take over. And I think the judge who made the decision realized this when he said that he wanted to affect this decision within a few hours because otherwise he knew it was going to be decided in the streets. I think he was right. And what we have to do at this point is to use that decision because that decision gives us a little more flexibility, a little more movement in order to escalate the struggle in the society. And I think we should take some advice from W.E.B. Du Bois, who wrote in 1910 something which is very relevant to the struggle today. He said, "Some good friends of the cause we represent fear agitation. They say, do not agitate, do not make a noise, work. They add, agitation is destructive, or at best negative. What is wanted is positive, constructive work. Now, such honest critics mistake the function of agitation. A toothache is agitation. Is a toothache a good thing? No. Is it therefore useless? No, it is supremely useful, for it tells the body of decay and death. Without it, the body would suffer unknowingly. It would think, all is well when low danger lurks." And we have to take Du Bois's advice, I think. And in agitating, we have to realize that in order to make education relevant, in order to make those three R's, reading, writing, arithmetic, relevant, we're going to have to talk about eliminating, getting rid of some three R's. And that's Reagan, Rafferty, and the Regents. Thank you.